The Shire of Nanup would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung people of the Noongar Nation as the traditional custodians of the land of which this podcast is recorded on, and we extend our respect to the elders past and present, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal Australians living within the Shire of Nanup.
I think the 82 flood, they told me to start evacuating, because at that stage the river's just trickling around, you know, it's just a little bit of water running along the, in the river, and people are saying, oh, what are you evacuating for? And, you know, there's hardly any water in the river. But then there was about a foot of my roof showing at the peak of the flood.
This is the Nanup Oral History Podcast. We're here on this very chilly morning in the Nanup Antique Shop, which is a beautiful shed with the light beaming in. And we're really lucky to have Robert Buckley here with us. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Robert.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
I'm really looking forward to hearing about your life in Nanup. So can you please tell us about where you grew up?
I was born out at Carlotta, out there on a farm. Sort of went to school at Nanup, started at the convent school. Then went up to the high school and, out in the farm is very interesting. We had no electricity, no power, but we got on good. As I said, it was very interesting. Like, we lived off the farm, rabbits, kangaroos, ducks, pigeons, so bronze wing pigeons. It was quite interesting, yeah.
And tell me about your family.
There's mum and dad, my eldest brother. There's three boys and a girl. There's Richard, my eldest brother, Terry, myself and Deb. Yeah, three boys and one girl, so yeah.
When you say there was no power, but you lived off the land, how did that work in terms of the meat and...?
Yeah, we grew most of our own vegetables and old green safe with a wet bag on it. That was our fridge. After a while we got a kerosene fridge, but I remember once we used to have a old willow tree outside the house. And when we'd shoot a kangaroo, we'd hang the kangaroo up on the willow tree and we'd take sort of some meat off one side of it and we'd probably eat that. Then the next day that'd all be fly-blowing. So we'd go around the other side and cut some meat off that and eat that. So, you know, got by. I remember at night time, us kids used to go to bed once the sun went down. Mum would have an old tilly lamp and she'd read. And Dad would be milking cows and Dad would finish milking cows around about 9 o'clock at night. So no air conditioning, had a open fire in the house. Yeah, that was about it. So,
What sort of house was it?
The house is still out in the farm. My eldest brother, Richard, there's only myself and Richard left. Terry passed away and my sister tragically got drowned down at Black Point. It's old sort of weatherboard house. Still in pretty good nick. My eldest brother, he still lives out on the farm.
We have heard some stories of the children being out on the veranda. Was that you at all? Or were you able to, was there enough space inside for everyone to sleep?
Myself and my sister had one bedroom when we were young, and my two other brothers had another one. So there was only sort of three bedrooms in the house. I remember we used to have an old copper and we'd sort of boil up the water for the bath. Yeah, Mum would fill the bath up and we'd all share that, like, you know, two in a bath at a time. And, it was quite good out there. So, you know, good environment for kids, I reckon. So, yeah.
What was it that brought your parents to Nanup?
Dad served up in New Guinea. He was a warrant officer and he got one of those farms where I think the government allocated farms for returned soldiers. And Mum was originally from Darlington and Dad was originally from Midland. And after the war, I think they got married during the war, and after the war, that would have been about 1947, they came down, and the farm was just, at that time, it was 306 acres, and the farm was just a bit of a shack. Only a little bit was cleared. They cleared the farm and got sort of the house rebuilt. Yeah, that was it. So
when they'd done that, was it dairy that they moved into?
Yes, it was dairy, yeah. Yeah, most of the other farms were out there, the Robertses, McKittricks, Durls, Wisharts, they're all dairy, the whole lot were dairy. So Jim Dean used to, and it was mainly butter. Jim Dean would come out there with the truck and pick up all the milk from all the farms. That was Wisharts, and as I mentioned, and they'd take it to Capel. So, yeah.
Were you involved in that process at all with the milking and?
No, not really. We had to do our fair share of like work. We had to clean up the cow yards. We'd have to go and pick up all the cow poo with a shovel and put it in a heap. I remember we used to have to feed the pigs because we also had pigs out there. We had to fill the bull's water trough up, and we used to get paid for that. We also get paid for catching rabbits, two bob a rabbit. And I remember we used to get threepence for a mice if we caught one, because there was that many mice in the shed. We'd set mouse traps and we used to get threepence for a mouse.
Is this payment from your parents?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For helping
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, so there was always plenty to do when we were kids, you know. You know, there's plenty of bush out there. We'd go and make cubby houses and, you know, what typical young people used to do those days. Yeah.
Sounds like a wonderful childhood.
Yeah, it was. It was a very, yeah, it was a good childhood, yep.
And when you said you went to the convent school, I don't know, what is that?
The convent school was where the church is now. Behind the church, there was a convent school, and a lot of the Catholics used to go to the convent school. After a while, most of us went from there from grade one up to about grade seven. Then we went up to the state school. And the convent school would have celebrated, it was 100 years centenary on the 26th of April, just gone. Yeah, that was in the West Australian, that was in the paper. Yeah, the convent school was run by nuns. Yeah, after a while it closed down and we all went up to the state school.
Is that because the state school got built?
Yeah, it's the high school at the moment. The actual state school was where the Shire office is now. That was the state school, but then the high school got built, I think, in the 60s. Yeah, I remember out in the farm when, you know, even when we were kids, you'd get those wet days, it would rain and it would rain and it would rain all day. Then it'd sort of clear up about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now you don't get those days for some reason. And I remember the creek where our house was, there's a creek alongside it and used to run all winter. But that hardly ever runs now. Every time I go out there and see my brother and everything and look at the creek, even winter time, it hardly ever runs. You seem to get the front sort of come and go real quick, you know, nowadays. But in the olden days, you'd get a front that would sort of come and just hang there and just pour heap of rain. And it just, I remember going to school on the school bus and all the creeks would be running, you know, there'd be that much water around, but you don't see that now. Or I definitely reckon it's climate change, yeah.
And what were the summers wet too?
No, there's a lot of hot summers. Yeah, very hot summers, so. Yeah, the summers, I don't think the summers have changed well. The summers are sort of getting longer and longer. You know, you take last year, for instance, when all the trees were dying and everything, that was just unbelievable. And yeah, it's definitely changed, hell, yeah.
I wonder what that means long term for a community like Nunup.
Oh, not a great deal difference, I don't suppose, you know. I hope I'm wrong with the climate change. I hope it does, you know, get back to the normal winters, but I'll just wait and see, I suppose.
Moving out of childhood, what happened? Did you stay in Nunup?
Yeah, once I finished school, I worked down the timber mill. I worked in the old mill, and sort of the new mill was built alongside it. And I was on the galloping out trolley. And I used to, myself and I think Peter Bilecki was another one, and old Tito Della, we used to load the trolley up with wood, and it'd be on like a trolley on railway lines, and we'd get it, we'd push it all the way out there, and then you'd put your sleepers off here, you'd put your 4x2s and 6x2s and your house orders and so forth. And that was the old mill, and that's where they had the old twin saws, and that's where I did my, probably about my 6 months. Had a short stint down there. Then most of the young blokes, a lot of the young blokes were heading up north. So myself and two other people, Charlie Marlow and Sam Treadgold, we headed up to Cape Lambert. We would have only been about 18. And Pat Patterson was a Nanup person who had a supervisor job up there, and he got us job up, work up there. So I worked for Bell Brothers up at Cape Lambert. Yeah, I was up there for about 4 or 5 years. Then me Marble got called out to do national service. So I went and did Dashos, and that was very interesting.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
It was the basic training. It was the first 10 weeks, and that was 10 weeks of hell. Yeah, we did basic training at Pakapanyo. I got drafted, I was artillery, got into the artillery, and I did corps training at Manly, and it ended up at Ingleburn. Didn't complete national service, only had a couple of months to go when the Labor Party got in, and we all got out, so yeah.
So this is for the Vietnam War? And
yeah, we were the next intake to go to Vietnam, and myself and most of the other blokes didn't want to go to Vietnam. So one of the blokes had a small transistor radio, and he was listening to the results of the election, and he said that Labor got in, and it went just from one person to another person to another person that Labor Party got in, and we're out. And I remember next morning we went and seen the sergeants. The sergeants are very good people. We just told them to shove it, shove your national service. But they tried to talk us into sort of completing nationals to get all the benefits. Then I went on leave, and I came back here. I had a job offered to me from the forestry department. And but if I completed nationals, there's a good chance that when I got back, I wouldn't have the job. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you ended up working for the forestry department for 45 years?
Yeah. Well, actually, before I went to Nashos, I went from up north. I came down here and I got a sort of a part-time job in the forestry. It was money allocated for so many blokes, it was Carrara crew, I think they had Carrara money or something, for about 2 months. Well, I was in that group just before I went to Nashos. Then I came back, Noel Ashcroft offered me my job back. And with that and Nashos, I did 45 years. I stayed in the forestry department.
Tell us about your job. What did you do and how did it evolve?
Yeah, I started off in the crews. Yeah, it was a lot of pine pruning, prescribed burning, fire suppression, pine planting. We did all that. We started falling pines because they started extracting the pines from the steep country. So with the skyline, forestry introduced the skyline. Then I went falling, myself and Vic Lorkovic went falling.
Excuse my ignorance, but what is a skyline?
Yeah, skyline's like a big truck with a winch on it. And it'd sort of be on top of the hill, then they'd send a sort of a winch down to the bottom, and they'd sort of had a pulleys that would go around in a big circle, and they'd sort of hook onto the logs and pull them up. And I did that for about 6 years, then the skyline got shut down. Then I went back into the crews, and then I got an overseer's job, and I was a sort of crew leader overseer for about... Yeah, probably did that for about 25 years as an overseer. And, yeah, it's a lot of fires, a lot of fire suppressions. you know, when I first started, the forestry department was 45 people then, but now I think it's four.
Tell us about what happened over time to make it reduce so much. And
oh, it's just political, politics. Nanup was one work centre, then there was Coorup, then there was Collie, Busselton, Margaret River, Pemberton, Manji. But then they decided to sort of join Coorup with Nanup, with Busselton to make it Blackwood. Down Manji, it was Pemberton, Northcliffe, Manjimup, and they were Warren and so forth. And up, Dwelling Up, it was Dwelling Up. What other places up there? I think Dwelling Up was with Jarrodale and so forth. They were joined up in Perth. There was Middle Swan and they were joined up into Cruise. So it all became like big work centres, not like, you know, towns combined. And so
how did that affect Nanup?
Well, if we had to do a burn or anything, like a big aero burn or something like that, we used to sort of get crews in from Collie and that. And at that stage, Nanup was sort of, it was down to about 20-odd people. As the years went on, the crews just dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And once the aircraft came in, they reckon that was the big problem solver for fires. You know, if there's going to be a fire, they just call in the aircraft and they sort of drop their loads on the fire. And that was one of the biggest things that sort of was going to help fight fires, the aircraft. But
now we started to move on to the concept of natural disasters. I know, were there any major fires while you were in the forestry department?
Yeah, there's a fair few I was involved in. Probably the biggest one would have been the Millianup fire, and the other one would have been N10, which wasn't a real big fire, but that was one out in a pine plantation just east of Nanup. There was the Northcliffe fire and, of course, the fires up at Yarloop. Yeah, I was involved in the whole lot of them. So Perth Hills fire, every day I was I was up there for 2 weeks at a time. Yeah, it's long hours. I remember the longest stint I ever did was at the Yarloop fire. You know, that's when the fire first started. I did 33 hours on the first shift. You know, you can't even think straight next day. But things have changed now. They don't do those big, long stints now. But, you know, it's trouble is when you're the first at the fire, you know, and you're trying to round the fire up and it's getting bigger and bigger. And in the end, it's like most of the fires, like the Northcliffe fire and the one up at Yarloop, and that once they get that big, it's just asset protection because you just can't round them up. They're just too big. So can't track them with machines and that.
You were also part of the Nanup Brook Volunteer Bushfire Brigade as captain, weren't you?
I wasn't captain for very long because my wife got very sick and I had two young boys to look after, and she spent a fair bit of time up in Perth, and I chucked the cat. I couldn't do the job. I told them that my wife's sick and, you know, I wouldn't be available and everything, so I chucked the captain job in and yeah, had to mainly look after my wife and the two boys. So, yeah, so I didn't do a big stint, but yeah, I'm thinking of going back and joining Nanup Brook Brigade. So, yeah, I'll probably do that next year. So, yeah, honestly, if a fire comes with a good howling nor-west wind behind it and it starts off sort of out to Busselton, out at sort of north of Nanup, and the nor-west winds are the worst winds, the hot nor-west winds, and if it gets into the river, you could say goodbye to Nanup if with a good nor-west wind. And I reckon everyone's just got to be prepared. You know, I've got a pump at my place, and if a fire comes at my place, I can practically drown the place. But yeah, a lot of places aren't prepared. We've been lucky. We've been very lucky here at Nanup. That's my biggest message to people. One thing about forestry and about fires and everything, they're very safety conscious, and they do, you know, drill it in your head, and you do a lot of fire training. You know, even before every season, you do fire training. It's just drilled into your head, which is good.
Another thing I'd like to talk about is the big flood. I know you were very affected by that. Can you talk to us about that time?
Yeah, that was, I think, the 82 flood. Yeah, I was working up at the forestry then. Yeah, they had that cyclone, a couple of cyclones up at Wage and Katenning somewhere in Dumbleyung. And we didn't hardly had any rain down here. But we were told that Nanup could be expecting a flood sort of thing. And I remember on the Friday, they told me to start evacuating.
Because can you quickly tell us where you had property there?
Oh, yeah, I had it down at down at the Arboretum. There was one forestry house, and that was the house I was living down next to the Arboretum. They told me to start evacuating on the Friday. I remember a lot of people, because at that stage, the river was just trickling around, you know, it's just a little bit of water running along in the river. And people are saying, oh, what are you evacuating for? And, you know, there's hardly any water in the river. But then it sort of all came down in one big hit. Yeah, I got all my gear out, but I think it was the next door neighbour, Dave Blythe. I don't think he was just sort of inland a little bit, up a bit from me, but I think he got flooded out because he didn't move any of his gear, and Mickey Cockman was another one. There was about a foot of my roof showing at the peak of the flood. And the flood came, it flooded all the bowling green and came right up to the steps of the hotel. You know, a lot of people go down there and they see the 1982 markers, you know, they see all the markers down below 64 and in the 50s and so forth. And next minute you look right up there and there's the 82 one. So that's an eye-opener for a lot of people, yeah.
And when you say it came down in a big hit, was it like a dangerous...?
Not in a big hit, it just sort of came down gradually, you know, all pretty quick, but not sort of in one big gush sort of thing. And Father Brian Morrison, I think he was coordinating all the SES, and I was the first person to evacuate, and I had gear scattered everywhere because I had was up at the nurse's quarters, up at the hospital, some of my gear's behind the church, some of it's in the presbytery, and yeah, so my house was condemned. There was only two houses condemned. Mine was one, and Merv Longbottom's was another one.
And what happened with Nanup after that event?
Yeah, recovered. It sort of big clean up after that, you know, like any typical flood. I remember most of us people worked at the forestry was sort of didn't do the day-to-day work. We went around assisting cleaning houses out with the – we used to get all the trucks, you know, the heavy duties and the gang trucks, because for fire fighting and fire suppression, we were just using that to hose houses out, so, and cleaning them all up. So, yeah, everyone, you know, around Nanup sort of helped each other and got back on our feet.
Where did you move to after that?
Yeah, I moved up to Dunnet Road and another forestry house up there. I hated living up there, absolutely hated it. Then I remember a place where I am now that belonged to Bevan and Faye Blythe, and every time I drove past that I thought to myself, gee, I'd love to live there, I'd love to, and love to have that place. So I remember going down to the pub one Saturday night, and I was talking to Mikey Marlow, which is Bevan's brother-in-law. I said, what's Blythe doing these days? And he said, oh, he's just put his house on the market. And I went home, finished my beer and went home, and I said to Robin, that's my wife, I said, Blythe's put his place on the market, and I said, we're buying it. So I bought it next day. $105,000, which was a lot of money those days. So I bought it. That's just out on out on the Brockman Highway on Thomas Road. Very good neighbours, so, yeah.
Yeah, I know that part. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So why did you love that so much?
Oh, because it was so quiet and everything, you know, up and down it road. If there's dogs weren't barking, there's cars going up and down. And if that wasn't, people were playing music and you know, I'm a pretty light sleeper, so yeah, I couldn't believe when that place went on the market.
So how long have you been there for now?
About 30-odd years.
You would have seen a lot of change around there.
Yeah, yeah. Across the road, it's all subdivision. That was all farmland. And my two boys, Alan and Brian, they were only little. Used to go over there and we used to shoot rabbits and trap rabbits, and you're not allowed to do that now. There's about 30, 40 houses there now.
You're talking about Cockatoo Valley?
Cockatoo Valley, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, lots of change. Someone that was born in Nanup and still here, what Nanup means to you?
Oh, Nanup means a lot, you know. There's no way that I'll be moving elsewhere. I'll stay in Nanup as long as I possibly can, but Nanup has changed, you know. It's with all the subdivision like Cockatoo Valley, Archidor Park, and on weekends the people that come down from Perth, and you know, the music festival, you can't even move, and a lot of people coming from Perth and that, so yeah. Nanup's definitely changed, but the actual, when you think about it, the main street hasn't really changed much. You've still got the four square, and the shops is the only new shops is probably the medical centre, like Ampol's been there ever since I was a kid. That was just... That shop's just been added on to, and Foursquare hasn't really changed much. That was a grocery shop when I was a kid. So, yeah, the actual streets hasn't changed much. So
it's just the visitation and how many people.
Exactly right.
But we have spoken to some people that said that Nanup had quite a big population. You know, the forestry department was busy. There was lots of kids at the school.
Yeah, you were only talking about that last night with... I'm talking to my wife, who used to play basketball. Now, when I was leaving school and everything, there was 8 men's basketball teams. So I think there's 8 women's basketball teams. There's no men's now, no women's now. There's my wife was still playing last year, and she's 65. And there was, I think, about 4 teams, but that's all folded now, and there's only juniors now.
What happened?
Oh, I don't know. I think everyone just plays on their mobile phones. So
I know when I came, I was like, is there a netball team? Does anyone want to play tennis? But people say that it used to be like that. Was it because there were so many more families here?
Yeah, well, the mill employed, oh, God knows how many people, about 50 or 60. And the forestry, there was up to 40 or 50. So there was probably more people there. But when you think about it, with all the subdivision, the actual population probably hasn't changed, you know, with all the subdivision, probably the population's probably gone up. I might be wrong. But, you know, when you think about Jalbarrig up, look at all the subdivision down there, Darrett up, and, well, all those places like Archidor Park for farms, Cockatoo Valley for farms, Jalbarrig up, that was Stacey's farm down there. So sport, I think it was the main thing in those days. You know, it's even like the golf club. You know, when I went up there to have a few beers on the Saturday, I think the golf club, there was about 6 people playing golf. I remember years ago, you'd 30 or 40.
Wow. Rob, you've highlighted so many changes that have happened in Nanup, from floods, the forestry department, lifestyle, schooling. It's been so incredible to talk with you today. Understanding how your journey has been shaped by historical moments in time and how your service has sent you beyond Nanup's borders. Thank you so much for coming to talk with us today. It's been amazing.
Yeah, oh, it's a pleasure, but yeah, I'm a bit nervous at interviews.
You've been listening to the Nanup Oral History Podcast. If you are not a Nanupian, please come and visit our small town. We would love you to come. If you are a Nanupian, please share it with your family and friends. We're really proud of this, and we hope you are too.
This podcast was made possible through the successful funding by the Department of Community's Age Friendly Community Program, facilitated through the local government's professionals and supported by the Shire of Nanup. We would like to thank all of those who have shared their stories to make this podcast happen. The podcast has been produced by the Shire of Nanup's Economic and Community Development Team and edited by Simple Ben Stories.